Let's kick it off with the general question. Tell me a little bit about Brightlight.
I am a guy that grew up in the South Wales valleys, not New South Wales, actual South Wales in the UK. Very sleepy kind of valley. And so I used music as a way to see the world outside of my very, I won't say boring, but let's say placid surroundings, and got really obsessed with pop culture, like movies and the radio, dance music, and ended up somehow doing it for a living and getting to travel the world, which is kind of wild. I'm a big Catherine O'Hara fan. Love Kylie Minogue, obviously.
So this is your fourth album, Fun City. What makes this album different from the rest of your work?
It's got a more specific theme. So it's about the LGBTQ plus community and what has happened in our like history and what we're aiming for in the future. So it's much more about a community than about myself. It's the album I've done with the most collaboration. So every song apart from one has got a guest vocalist. There's 12 guests on the record to sort of populate the album with more than just my voice and make it more of a like a narrative with extra voices that sort of tell more of a story about the world and the community to which I belong, the LGBTQ plus community. You know, it's fun and sad in equal measures, which I guess is true of most of my records. But it's really about starting conversations this time and getting people to the dance floor, but with a sort of slightly more open heart and approach to looking at the people around them with a bit more open eyes.
Did you go into this album making process expecting to have a feature on almost every track?
Not initially, no. When I was writing the songs, I was trying to work out how I was going to present the record. And when I got a few people to collaborate, I kind of just started running wild. And I thought, when I decided to make it a point of having it about the LGBTQ plus community, that's when I decided to try and have a guest on every song so that it did feel much more like it was about the community rather than about one person presenting it. Because I don't think one voice can really represent that breadth of person or that, like, you know, the variety of the community that I was trying to talk about. So I made a point then of trying to get as many different people, different backgrounds, voices, different ages, different styles on the record to then make it seem a little bit more 3D.
Were there any features that you were surprised to be able to get?
I'm kind of surprised that I got Nikki and Donna, honestly. That was pretty wild. Obviously, like, I live in New York and they were hugely synonymous with the New York dance scene with all the work they did with Madonna back in the day and the Chet Pettibone productions. I can't really believe that came off, and they're so lovely. I really, really like them both. I talk to them quite often and they're fabulous people. And as somebody that is a huge Madonna fan and a huge Chet Pettibone fan, I never really thought that that would come off. So I'm pretty amazed that that came together.
Collab, it sort of goes the other way as well, because you've got a lot of remixes of at least three of your tracks. Why did you put so many remixes out for Fun City?
Because it's supposed to be an album that lends itself to different areas of queer culture. So I wanted it to have different mixes that would fit into different scenarios. So like, I knew that Fire Island is a place that I really love. And so I wanted to do a sort of like disco style remix of the song so that it would fit by a poolside and you could drink a cocktail by the sea with sunset listening to that record. I wanted to make something a little bit harder for the dance floors, because like lots of my friends run slightly harder electro or house nights, and the originals wouldn't fit for that. And then do something a little bit more throwback for the fans I have that really love the 80s and 90s. So I really wanted to give the songs a life beyond their original form so that in different arenas, they could still fit and belong, because the queer nightlife scene has evolved so much in the last like 10 years, for example, that, you know, people have really created their niches with the events that they're running and the different programming they're doing and different DJs that they're working with. I thought it would be fun and a fun challenge to try and make these songs have an identity that would morph into different spaces.
Speaking of different spaces, you've been running Romy and Michelle's Saturday afternoon tea party for a while now. How has the shift been from live space to digital space?
Really difficult. You know, I'm sure any DJ will tell you that, but it's been particularly difficult for this party because the idea of it is to create community. Mm. And the thing that I've really loved about doing it in a physical space is that in this bar in New York, which is run by Alan Cumming, I was able to do this party from like 3 till 8 p.m. on a Saturday so that people who have night jobs can come. People that have kids can come. People that don't like drinking can come. People who are sober can come. People that are like between shifts in work, they can pop in for an hour or two. And it also gave an easy way to make people start speaking to each other. So I have these request walls and people make requests on post-it notes, kind of like, because Romy said that they invented post-its. And I would see people at the request wall while they're writing out the request, start chatting to other people writing their requests. And it was really lovely to see people make friendships and start talking to each other and, you know, interact with people in a way that they wouldn't normally if you were just in a dance party. So I really was very proud of that. I'm very happy to see that grow over the couple of years that I was running it. And initially, there was a really big uptake online, you know, when people were like properly in lockdown. And I did see people chatting in the chat boxes to the side of the conversation and make friends. And I still see people posting with each other. And we had a lovely little community. But obviously, when the bars opened up again, or when people were not completely stuck at home, then they're not looking for online entertainment as much. So it kind of, you know, it wasn't as effective after the proper lockdown. So I've taken a break from it for a while, which is sad because I do love doing the parties every week and I love getting people together every week and seeing the same faces. But I'm really hoping to be able to do it in person soon because it's just so nice interacting with people. You know, I don't play music just for my own benefit and it's hard to get that sense of connection online.
I feel like then since you've performed for this variety of audiences, is there anything about queer audiences that is different performing for them?
They definitely pick up on my niche gay references a lot quicker. So like, you know, I'll drop in like a sample when I'm doing my own shows. I'll do like a mashup live song or a cover version, or I'll drop in like a chop from like an audio sample from like a film or something like that. And more often than not, somebody in the room will get that reference, which is maybe not as instant in a more heterosexual space, because a lot of the references I have are very queer culture forward, because that's what kind of saved me growing up. You know, it was the kind of joy that you look for in the world, like a Joan Cusack as Debbie Jelinski quote or something like that, you know. So there's like a different level of being able to find the Easter eggs in a queer space, which I really enjoy.
Why do you bring so much of your love of film and pop culture into your music and performance?
Because it's really fun. I mean, my whole slant on music or performance or art or culture is that nothing exists in an isolated bubble separate from the rest of the world. So I'm a big fan of like intertextuality. I did an English literature degree, which I really couldn't be bothered with. But one thing that was hammered home all the time was context. And I do think that that is something people miss a lot in day-to-day life. So I try to add context to my shows, to my music, to all of the stuff that I create, so that people remember to look outside of themselves and to look outside of one thing and understand how it feeds into popular culture, or how, you know, it's obviously referencing something else. Like lineage and history is really important. Referencing and homage is really important, to understand that like very few artists create something completely from scratch, and to understand where they've referenced something from is to understand your own history, and is to look a little bit deeper at things, which I think everybody needs to do on many different levels in the world today.
You brought up history, and I suppose since you're hosting a tea party, is this something that you feel like you need to connect to, this queer history?
Yes, it is, yeah. I mean, growing up in South Wales, there was no queer history around me. Not very tolerant, let's say, of gay people when I was growing up. And so when I did finally get to connect to queer culture, like gay bars in Swansea, which is my nearest city, you know, the world, like the saturation level of the colour, like went up, and you realise like, oh, there's people like me, and I can, you know, learn from people, and I can see people and have fun and breathe a little bit easier. And that moment of like clarity was just like, oh, I get it now. And then you start to learn more about songs and films that songs are from, and remixes and producers and stuff like that. And I think history is very important. That there are a lot of rights that we have that people have forgotten why we have them, who fought for them. And it is very important to remember that. It's very important to remember that, you know, Stonewall was led by Black and Latina trans women. And it's important to remember that today there are people who are trying to roll back our rights. And you need to remember that, like, we are not safe, we are not fine. And largely white cis men in the LGBTQ plus community don't feel that sting as much as trans women, trans men, black gay people, you know, white lesbians even. Like there's a kind of comfort level, which means that people forget where they're from, where they're going to, and what you need to do to look out for everybody. So I do think it's important to bring history into music and pop culture so that we remember that, like, we don't exist separate from everyone else. Like, our lives are very intertwined with everyone else around us, whatever the mainstream media or politicians tell us it's not. Like, you do not exist without these other people. And I think that's really important.
Your queer advocacy, do you bring this, why do you bring it into your music?
Why would you not? I mean, I just think if you have a platform, why would you not try and do something good with it? I do understand that some people make music or film or whatever for the light, fluffy fun of it. Of course, I love films that are just dumb and make you feel good and make you laugh without any real poignancy. But I feel like aside from that, you know, you've still got the opportunity to talk about things, whether that's in a song lyric or whether that's in an interview or a conversation. Like, do you not care? I just think, like, when I see people avoiding any kind of advocacy or any kind of uplift, like, do you not care about anybody else? I find it hugely irresponsible to just, like, not care enough to try and do something, you know? I didn't grow up with queer people around me, and I didn't grow up aware of a lot of queer issues. Like, I didn't know much about HIV when I was growing up, because in South Wales, no one talked about it. I didn't know much about safe sex, unsafe sex. I didn't know much about Stonewall riots. I didn't know much about, you know, marriage equality, anything, like all of the stuff that people have done to, like, keep queer people downtrodden or to uplift them. And I think if you can see an opportunity to help or to raise awareness or something, why would you not want to be part of that and do something for your community?
Do you feel like you write music specifically for queer audiences? And if heterosexual people are into it, great.
No, I don't think I do. I think, you know, a lot of the, like I said before, a lot of the references that I have are from queer culture, but I don't write to the exclusion of straight people. Like, you know, I do have straight friends. My parents are also straight. I think, you know, there's definitely, like, Easter eggs in there, which are definitely there for the queer community. But the songs that I write, I try and write things, like, I don't often use pronouns or gender or sexual orientation specific language in my songs, so that the message and the overall kind of themes can be applicable to basically anyone, which is my whole point of life. It's like, you've been told that you're separate from like black people, from immigrants, from straight people, from queer people, but you're just a human being. And then the rest of the world has just decided that we have these weird little segments that apparently don't overlap or interact, which of course they do. So I have tons of straight people, especially in like London or the UK, bits of the UK, Wales, where I'm from, tons of straight people that come to the shows because they just really love the music. And it's almost more important to me to be able to bring those people to the shows, so that not a lot of them have a huge amount of queer friends or family. And bringing that kind of mix of people together is really my goal. Like, showing everybody that you don't have to be type A, type B, type C to enjoy this type of song. Like, you just want to go to a show, you just want to have fun, you just want to be part of something. And the more diverse an audience that I can bring to things is me succeeding in showing people that, like, we can all talk to each other and have a better time for doing that. So no, I don't make music just for gay people, but I am thrilled when it does speak to a queer community, because, you know, I never grew up expecting to be part of that community in any significant way. So to feel like it does speak to people in that community makes me really proud that, like, I've done something and I belong. You know, it's hard to feel like you belong when you're an LGBTQ plus person. I think the overriding problem is belonging and feeling left out, isolated, lost. And eventually when you do find some kind of belonging, that's kind of amazing. So, you know, whether people perceive me as writing music just for queer people, great, then at least I fit somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
And for other people that see beyond that, that's also great. I'm just a person making music, and I try to write things about the general experience in life. Obviously, I'm a white gay man, so a lot of it is filtered through that viewpoint. With Fun City, I've tried very purposefully to look at the queer experience, but not for the benefit of just queer people, but also so that people can learn a little bit about our history through like the odd lyric here and there. But you can also appreciate it on like a very basic level and just be like, oh, that's a cool dance song. It's like the Trojan horse attack. Give them a dance floor song, and then one day they might be drunk and hear a lyric and be like, oh my God.